the most of your Walt Disney World vacation.
The top six things we liked about Horizons. Hi, I'm Herb Leibacher, and welcome to episode number 61 of the World of Walt podcast. Make the most of your Walt Disney World vacation for the week of February 28th, 2016. This is the podcast for Walt Disney World fans, whether you're planning your next trip or just enjoy reliving a little bit of Disney magic. Today's podcast is sponsored by Ear to Their Travel. If you're planning a trip to any Disney destination, give Phil at Ear to Their Travel a call. Phil is a former Disney cast member, so he really knows how Disney works. He can help you plan all the details of your trip at no extra cost to you, while making sure you get the best possible deal on your vacation. You can reach Phil at www.eartotheirtravel.com. It all started back on October 1st, 1983, exactly 1 year after Epcot Center opened. That is when Horizons opened in the Future World section of Epcot Center. For many folks who've had a chance to experience this attraction during its run, it made a very big impact. The attraction again opened in 83, it closed in 1994, and then actually reopened in 1995 when both the World of Motion and the Universe of Energy were being refurbished. And then it finally closed for good on January 9th, 1999, when it was ultimately demolished to make way for Mission Space. As I talk with different Disney fans, Horizons may be one of the lost Epcot attractions that made the biggest impact and that people miss the most. What was so special about this extinct attraction that people still talk about it and miss it more than 15 years after it's gone? Today, we're going to take a look at that question as we discuss the top six things we liked about Horizons. To help me explore this topic, I'd like to welcome a fellow Disney fan who has been going to the Walt Disney World Resort for more than 40 years and a contributor to the World of Walt website, Russ Reeves. Russ, welcome to the show.
Thanks, Herb. It's great to be with you again.
I'm looking forward to our conversation about Horizons. It's one that I think many people miss, even people who never saw it, I think, miss it. It has a reputation, so it's going to be a fun conversation. But let me check in with you on the warm-up question for the day first. What is your favorite Disney sweet treat?
Well, I don't even have to think about that, because when I get to Magic Kingdom, the first place I go is to Aloha Isle for a Dole Whip. And if I'm not going to Magic Kingdom, I'll find a way to get over to the Polynesian to pick one up there. But I love the Dole Whip and have for a long time.
I love the fact that you don't actually have to go into the Magic Kingdom to get a Dole Whip, that you can go to the Polynesian Village Resort and pick one up there. I think the Dole Whip is a special treat. You can get it in a few more spots these days, but it's not something that you can get in many places. And it's so good they even make t-shirts about it. So you know, yeah, Dole Whip is special.
That is right, yeah.
Yeah.
How about you? What do you like?
For me, it doesn't seem like it's all that an extraordinary item, but I really enjoy getting the Mickey Rice Krispie treats dipped in the dark chocolate. I just love the marshmallow that's in them and the crunchiness that's in them. I like the little Mickey-shaped sprinkles that are on top. And while lots of people can make Rice Krispie treats, or you can buy them in the store, there is something special about the ones they have at Walt Disney World, and that is probably my favorite sweet treat.
Everything is better when it's shaped like Mickey.
This is true. This is true. If only liver and asparagus came shaped like Mickey, then the world might be a better place.
I know this is not a podcast about, this episode is not about sweet treats, but let me ask you about one that you and I actually have had together, and that's the Zebra Dome. What do you think of the Zebra Dome?
I love me some Zebra Domes. They are so moist, just delicious. If I go to BOMA, I could probably just sit down and eat $60 worth of Zebra Domes and skip everything else.
Okay, all right. Well, I had them with you, and I was really looking forward to them because I'd heard all these wonderful things. I was a little underwhelmed.
Mm.
I don't know. Yeah.
I like them. Well, before we start,
a lot of people do.
Yeah, they are popular. Yep. You know, by the time you've gotten through all the rest of the buffet, there's just not enough room, I think, for doing a Zebra Dome justice. So maybe that's what happened.
That's probably my problem.
Yeah. Okay, good. So before we break out in a dessert war, let's get to our topic of the day, the top six things we liked about Horizons. So you and I had a chance to speak, and I'm going to break normal World of Walt protocol, and I am going to go first because we thought it would flow better that way. So for number one, one of the things that I liked best about Horizons was the architecture of the building itself. And I think there's an interesting story or maybe history behind the building. So Disney, of course, is a business, and like all businesses, it has to deal with budgets. And during the development of Horizons, the attraction budget was cut, and it was cut a lot by $10 million, which meant that the building size had to be reduced, the length of the attraction had to be reduced, actually by about a third. But I think even with such a significant cutback in the amount of money that was spent, they ended up with something very iconic. And I thought, you know, symbolizing an idea through a building or a structure is not something easy to do. So when we think about the World of Motion, okay, makes sense. You should probably have a wheel. When you think about communication, makes sense. You'd have a globe. If you're representing the seas, you could show them in waves. But how do you represent the future? And I think coming up with this pyramid shape that Horizons had was really a smart choice. And it seems like that pyramid shape comes up in other places, like in Imagination, for example. It's sort of a shape that can apply to different ideas. And so I think it's interesting that the shape reaches towards the horizon or reaches towards the future. And I think it's also interesting that the Horizons building was really the first significant Walt Disney World building that was completely torn down. That's what I read, and I actually couldn't think of any others in that time frame that had been completely destroyed. Buildings are expensive things, and Disney most often reuses them. There were some rumors that maybe there were some problems with the roof, or maybe some structural issues. And sometimes maybe it's even hard to fit a new idea into an existing shape, especially when it came to what eventually replaced Horizons. But for me, the architecture of the building, I think, was very interesting. It had a great backstory, and I think it was well chosen for the story of the attraction itself.
Yeah, it was a beautiful building, you know, just very futuristic looking. And in fact, my daughter and I recently built this building on Disney Infinity. We looked at some pictures and we got our, you know, we used the blocks on the game there, and we actually recreated the old Horizons building. That was a lot of fun.
Wow, neat. Very good. All right. Number one was architecture. So number two, Russ, is over to you.
So from the outside, we're going to go inside and get on maybe the coolest ride vehicle that Disney ever had. So this is my my top one that I miss is the ride vehicle itself. It had these cool sliding doors that open that you got in through, and that you actually sit sideways, kind of like you're almost like on a sofa, looking out at the attraction as you go through it. And then there was an interactive panel on there, kind of like you know, maybe a precursor to something like an iPad. And the ride, as I remember it, was very smooth. It wasn't jerky or, you know, bumpy or squeaky. It was just a very smooth glide through. There were speakers behind your head. I mean, it was just an awesome ride vehicle. And I'm not sure, but I think this might have been the first ride vehicle, at least one of the first ones that I can think of, in which the sounds of the show are actually being played in your ride vehicle, not in the room around you. Maybe Spaceship Earth did that first, but this was definitely one of the first, if not the first, that was the case. But when I think about the early years of Epcot, three ride vehicles stand out in my mind. This one, the Spaceship Earth ride vehicle, and Universe of Energy ride vehicle. They were all, you know, for the early 1980s, they were very futuristic, and they were so different from what we'd been experiencing for a decade in the Magic Kingdom that it really made Epcot feel like a different kind of place. So I miss that ride vehicle.
You're right. That was a very unique design. And I was trying to think, are there other ride vehicles, other attractions that have a similar setup where you're facing to the outside or to the side of your forward motion? The only one I could think of would be the train that goes to Rafiki's Planet Watch, which it's not the same thing, but I guess the orientation of how you sit compared to the motion is yeah. somewhat similar. But that was something very unique about the setup.
The train at Disneyland is that way.
Oh.
Looking out sideways so that you can see the Grand Canyon diorama and the dinosaur diorama as you're going through the dark part of it. Yeah, so you're sitting sideways on the train at Disneyland. But for inside, for a dark ride, I don't know of another one that you're sitting sideways on, at least not off the top of my head.
Yeah, I think you're right. That was something very unique. And actually, that's going to move right into the third item on our list, which is the ability to pick your own ending. So today there's a lot of discussion within the Disney community about interactivity. So we have a generation now that is used to having a supercomputer in our shirt pocket all day long. We are used to quick responses and being able to control things. And this attraction, Horizons, was, I think, the only Disney attraction at the time that had multiple endings, which you as a guest could control. So Horizons allowed you to select the path that you wanted to take back to the future port, and the majority would win. And I think it was a very cutting-edge design for its time. It offered interactivity, it offered controls, it had different endings, and that really increased the rewrideability of the attraction. And for using technology probably from the late 70s and maybe the very early 80s to do something like that, I'm sure it took a lot of very creative engineering.
Yeah, you know, I think what I would compare this to now is like Star Tours, but even there you don't get to choose your ending, but you're going to have different endings, you know, in different sequences of the film every time you go through that. But when they talk about interactivity, you know, yeah, I just want to say, so in other words, you want what you tore down with Horizons. Yeah.
Exactly.
Still a little jaded about that.
Yep. So picking your own ending, I think that was a very unique part of Horizon. So, okay, that was number three. Number four, Russ, back over to you.
So how you knew how you were going to pick out which ending was based on what you'd seen leading up to that point as you went through a couple of scenes that showed you life in the future in different environments. And one of those was my next one on my list, which was Mesa Verde. So there were these three scenes, and that kind of gave you a glimpse of, you know, where you were going to end up as you chose your own ending. There was the space station, Brava Centauri, and the sea base that was called Sea Castles, underwater environment. And then there was Mesa Verde, this desert farming scene. Now, I was a city kid. I never went to a desert before I was an adult. I never spent any time on a farm, but I knew enough to know that you don't farm the desert. But that was something that Horizons made it seem like you could actually do. I mean, even just the name of this place, Mesa Verde, the Green Mesa, those two words don't even go together. But Horizons gave us this idea that one day, maybe you could actually be farming in the desert. Probably the most memorable thing about Mesa Verde was you went through that scene in the ride, you had that scent of oranges in the air. You know, that's still to this day something that people talk about standing out in their mind as they think about Soarin'. And you know, Soarin' is, as we're recording this, Soarin' is closed, and we're waiting for the reboot of Soarin', and I really hope they keep that orange smell in there because that really just kind of gets in your memory. And that was there in the Mesa Verde scene as you see him growing oranges out in the desert. And there was this great line that's spoken as they're talking about the daughter of the family that's working out in Mesa Verde. That's, isn't it something? Send a kid to college for 7 years, and what happens? She becomes a farmer. I saw a T-shirt that someone had made recently that said Mesa Verde University, and underneath, and it was written in Latin, something that translates something like, give us 7 years and we'll make you a farmer. You know, that's just a great little tip of the hat to Mesa Verde.
Hmm. That was an interesting design to think that we could generate food from the desert. And I've also seen those T-shirts, too. I think a lot of people remember Mesa Verde.
It was like the most unique, I think, because, you know, we could envision a space station, and we have one of those now, and we could envision maybe, you know, sort of some sort of sea lab where people could live and work underwater. You know, I don't think we're quite there yet, but we could envision that. But the idea that you could actually farm the desert, you know, that was just very forward thinking, and that made that a very memorable scene there.
Yeah, I agree. Good. Number four, Mesa Verde. So number five, something that I really liked about Horizons is that, in a sense, it was a sequel to the Carousel of Progress. So if folks have listened to the show before, they know that the Carousel of Progress is one of my favorite attractions, originally debuted at the 64-65 World's Fair, thankfully still running today at the Magic Kingdom in Tomorrowland. There are some interesting parallels between the Carousel of Progress and Horizons. So the Carousel of Progress was sponsored by General Electric, and so was Horizons. The Carousel of Progress followed a family through some changes as they lived through the 20th century, and Horizons followed a family as they might live in the 21st century. There's also an interesting connection in that one of the Carousel of Progress's theme songs, Great Big Beautiful Tomorrow, could actually be heard in the Horizons attraction coming from the television and the Art Deco scene. And so I think it's interesting how the two attractions, even though they're executed in very different ways, have a similar motive of following a family as they progress through time and look forward. So that's something I always appreciated about Horizons.
Yeah, you know, I don't think I really made the connection between those two when I was younger, but, you know, as I think about it, you know, it's really kind of in your face. The family even reminds me a lot of the family from Carousel of Progress, and you know, and they're just likable people. You know, that's there's not a bad guy in this attraction, and they're just people that you'd kind of want to hang out with.
Yeah, I agree with you. I didn't really make the connection either until later on, actually, after Horizons was resting in peace. But I think the parallels are very interesting. And I think just the fact of trying to take on an idea like this in following a family through time as they look forward to the future, that's a pretty big undertaking. And I think Disney did a great job back in the 60s, and I think they did a great job in the 80s with both of those attractions.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay, so that was number five. Number six, Russ, we're over to you.
Okay, well, so for number six, I'm just going to kind of give this a heading that Horizons is a snapshot of Epcot. And what I mean by that is that Horizons represented to me all that Epcot originally stood for. If you remember, Epcot was supposed to be sort of a permanent World's Fair. Now, I think that that's kind of lost on people today because World's Fairs aren't what they used to be. But Horizons sort of epitomizes the spirit of the old World's Fairs. The introduction of innovation and technology to make life different in a better way. And I think Horizons really showed us that. It was a glimpse into the future of really limitless possibilities. And I think you got a little symbol of that in the beginning of the ride when they have this audio animatronic figure of Jules Verne there. You know, Jules Verne's books didn't really present the way things were or the way things they would be, but they invited you to imagine what could be in some potential future that you could imagine. And this attraction did that. Really, you know, I don't know that there's many attractions that I've been on in Disney parks or any parks that when I get off, I feel inspired. I want to do something important, and I want to be a shaper of the future, you know, and I never really became that, but when I was a kid and I was riding Horizons at Epcot, that's what it did to me. And I was reminded of that recently when the movie Tomorrowland came out. I'll have to tell you, I know this movie did not do well, and it's been, you know, kind of panned by a lot of critics, but I have to tell you, I got emotional watching that because it really took me back to that place where, you know, here is this, I was this naive young boy riding Horizons and thinking that, you know, I have the potential to help shape what the world will become one day in and beyond our lifetimes. I think that one of the reasons why people didn't really click with the movie Tomorrowland is because instinctively they associate it with Tomorrowland, because that's what it's called. But but if you go back and watch that movie and think about Epcot and Future World in particular, I think it helps you really appreciate the movie and maybe even Epcot a lot more. I watched it, in fact, just a few nights ago on Blu-ray, and I thought, you know, what would have been great is if they could have included either as a special feature on the Blu-ray or as maybe even just an introductory preface to the movie, Walt's original Florida Project video, where he talked about this idea of this experimental prototype community of tomorrow. And, you know, there's even a similarity, I think, in the skyline of the city Tomorrowland in the film and the old Progress City model that you see on Tomorrowland Transportation Authority now. But there's a line in the beginning of the movie when George Clooney's character, Frank Walker, and the younger female character, Casey, are kind of setting up the story, and Frank is sort of being cynical, and then he kind of catches himself, and he says almost in this kind of mournful way, "When I was a kid, the future was," and she says, "different?" And he says, "Yeah, different." And that line just kind of carries me back to the days when I was a bright-eyed, optimistic kid entering Epcot, riding horizons, and the future was wide open.
That is great, Russ. And I think it raises some really good points. And the one that I really liked was about how Disney Horizons is inspirational. So that's not something we see in a lot of other places, but I think we do see that at Disney. And maybe that's one of the things that made Horizons such a missed attraction. So it would inspire us to think about what could be. And I think Disney does that in a lot of different places, whether we're inspired by being proud of our history or being proud of our government or being proud of, I don't know, fill in the blank, but it does inspire us to think about what is possible. I think that really is a key to what made Horizons such a classic.
Yeah, and you know, when you think about Future World today, there's a very obvious thing missing from Future World today, and that's the future. there's not really an attraction in Future World that actually takes you to the future. But Horizons did that, and that's one of the really strong reasons why I miss it. I think that Epcot and Future World in particular is long overdue for an overhaul. And maybe once Star Wars Land and Toy Story Land are completed and Pandora, the World of Avatar, over at Animal Kingdom, once they get all those things finished, I really hope that Future World is going to be next on the Imagineers agenda to revisit and maybe bring something back into there that's really forward-thinking like Horizons was.
I hope so, too. It seems like Magic Kingdom got some love with New Fantasyland. We know what's happening in the world of Animal Kingdom with the Land of Pandora. A lot of things are going to be happening to Disney's Hollywood Studios with Star Wars and Toy Stories. And so it seems like it would be then time to come back and revisit Epcot. The future is always one of those tricky things. And I think Tomorrowland of the Magic Kingdom has struggled with it as well, in that by the time you get something built, it's out of date. So experiencing or presenting something that is future looking, I think, is always a challenge, but I would love to see some of the ideas that Disney might have about how that could apply to today's Epcot.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I have to say that I like the tribute to Horizons that sits in Mission Space. Have you noticed, I don't know, have you been on Mission Space before? Are you a Mission Space fan?
I'm a wimp, okay? So I've only been on the green side.
Okay, that counts. So if in the queue area, when you see the rotating space station right in the middle, I don't know if you've noticed, but there's a Horizons logo. So I love those sort of connections back.
Yeah, I did notice that. I think I pointed that out to my son when we were there, yeah. But, you know, it really just, I didn't appreciate it. It kind of hurt. they tore down this ride to build this thing, and I won't even get on the headliner side of it because I don't want to get sick and ruin my Disney day.
I guess you just have to Photoshop that old logo out of any photographs you might take in that area. Okay, fun list. The top six things we liked about Horizons. Number one, the architecture of the building. Number two, the ride vehicle. Number three, the ability to pick your own ending. Number four, Mesa Verde. Number 5, the fact that it was a sequel to the Carousel of Progress. And number 6, the idea that it was a snapshot of Epcot. So after going through this list, Russ, I think I miss Horizons all over again.
Oh, I do too. I'm almost sad just thinking about it now.
Yeah, me too. But I'll look back with happy memories about the Horizons that was, and maybe about the future world that could be.
Yeah, I hope so.
Okay. Russ, as always, thanks so much for joining me today. I had a good time.
I did too. Thank you. Appreciate the opportunity to be with you.
And today, of course, we have to head out with the music of Horizons. And while we have made it through the list of the top 6 things we liked about Horizons, our conversation isn't over. I would love to hear what you think. Do you have something you'd like to add to the list? You can do that by checking out the show notes page at worldofwalt.com/61. It's a page that works very well on desktops, tablets, and smartphones. Leave your comments in the comments section and check out what other people are saying as well. I'd like to thank everyone who's been in touch, and if you'd like to get in touch with me, you can do that too. Send me an email, info@worldofwalt.com. Leave a voicemail message at 407-391-5023. Leave an online voicemail message at worldofwalt.com/voicemail, and follow me on social media, facebook.com/worldofwalt and pinterest.com/worldofwalt. If you enjoyed today's podcast, I would appreciate it if you would spread the word. Tell your friends and your family about it. And to wrap up for today, I would like to give you a heartfelt thank you for spending some of your time with me. I'd also like to thank everyone who visits the worldofwalt.com site, where you can read interesting Disney articles and chat with other folks who enjoy Disney in the forum and in the comment sections. By listening here and by visiting the site, you allow me to share the fun of Disney with you. And that's pretty cool. Thank you so much for being a part of it. So until next time, my friend, may God bless you.
Dream away. So there's a great big beautiful tomorrow, shining at the end of every day. There's a great big beautiful tomorrow, just a dream away.